I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation cure master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah. That cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite. That cat is high.
Hi. Welcome to the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte, listening to the Heritage Radio Network. My guest today is Adam Kolesar. He is the proprietor of the Brooklyn Orgeat Company and tiki cocktail enthusiast.
Indeed.
Welcome to the show, Adam.
Hey, it's great to be here, man.
It's great to have you. One of the... Before we get into the actual conversation on tiki drinks and cocktails, one of the most striking, interesting things about you, I've known you now for a couple of years, and one of the most interesting things about you to me is that the fact that you are straight edge until the age of, what, 37?
37, sir. That's right.
37 years of no booze, no smoking, no drinking. Can you talk a little bit about straight edge? I mean, like, it's an old school, like, punk rock thing.
It is an old school, and it's also a new school thing. It's continued. But back in the day, I'm kind of an old stove, as they say. I've 47 now, so I've been an inveterate drinker for a good solid decade. But back in the day, coming up, those of you of similar vintage will recall the whole, like, DC punk thing. Bands like prominently like Minor Threat,
yeah,
and Youth of Today, and all that stuff going on back in the day, and certainly I was into punk rock right there from the onset back in 78, where there was no such thing certainly as straight edge. But you know, it was just funny as a kid. I was very uninhibited, as it might be. And so the whole drinking thing and the experimenting thing never really occurred to me in my early teens. And, you know, all my friends would try stuff. It was just never really an attraction. And believe it or not, I think my per annum consumption of beer until the age of 37 was perhaps 3 or 4. And that would be only in the absence of any other kind of hydrating fluid.
Right.
So I made it into the... Gosh,
so straight edge with benefits.
Straight edge with benefits, exactly. And I made it into the early 80s, into the mid 80s, and found a tribe of people that thought similarly. And okay, cool. So I like punk rock. Here's a philosophy that kind of ascribes to what I'm doing. And for years, I played in a straight edge punk rock band. And it was more, straight edge was more than not drinking. It was all about, you know, not being sexist and you know, kind of the anti-rock star thing.
Yeah.
And so that totally fit my bill of fare, so to speak. And the music was intense and fun, and the gigs were great. And we were even, like, on a record label with 7 Seconds. I played in a band called Bedlam Hour, which is a band out of South Carolina. So here it is. I found my group. I'm hanging. I'm doing my thing all the way past the band, going into my 30s and mid-30s. And it just never occurred to me. And also bear in mind that these are the darkest days of cocktail.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Drinks. And
so was there any attraction to anything to drink back then?
Really, wasn't. You know, yeah. I'm coming out of disco and the worst club mixology known to mankind. So there was nothing really to tempt me away in terms of wanting to drink.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So I made it all this way. I found a group of people. I still kind of listen to that music as anachronistic as it may be, but there's something there. And unfortunately now, you know, what's happened is the religious right has really glommed onto straight edge, and they use that as a tool to recruit
right.
little Christian dudes and right. girls. And so that I don't think I would be into it now. I was in straight edge when every other word out of Ian MacKay's mouth was the F word.
Yeah.
You know, it was a better brand, in my opinion, of
how
straight
very
edge.
Brooklyn of him.
That's right.
It's really interesting to me, the whole straight edge movement back in those days, and how it got to a point where it could be like really aggressive too.
Oh, absolutely.
Like you'd be at a show smoking a cigarette and somebody would punch it out of your mouth, you know, like stuff like that. I can't ever imagine you being that kind of
no,
a straight edger.
And, you know, our band was really, and our thought was really, listen, live and let live. This is our personal philosophy. You know, and it just enabled us to do a lot more with what we had as a band and as, you know, kids or young people with no money. You know, we showed up to our gigs, we played the gigs,
yeah.
you know, and it was still very, intense. It wasn't wimpy by any means. So,
yeah,
you know, it was, totally. The music was very aggressive in a good way, you know, but it's, you know, the famous stories of Ian MacKay stopping a crowd of 3,000 people because some poor girl was getting trampled to death. Just common sense. That's all.
Yeah.
So yeah,
yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that about like the your mentality with your old band Bedlam Hour, the mentality of being less of the aggressive straight edge. In theory, not mm-hmm. in music. Like mm-hmm. not, you know, you're still like pretty hardcore,
right?
But the theory of you know, this is our philosophy on how we do this.
Right.
We're not going to shove it down your throat.
No, not at all.
This is how this is how we find it best to suit us. And it's moving into the cocktail side of it. That's exactly how like a lot of these cocktail bars need to be these days too, you know? Like a lot of us, we're not necessarily telling you this is better than that. It's just like, man, this is what we find to be the best. And like with the way that you started into the way you got turned on to cocktails and to drinking, and it was your wife,
that's right,
Susan, bought you a ticket to
Dale DeGroff Cocktail College,
right?
And this is back in 2002.
This is one of his earlier,
very classes. Early efforts, and I yeah. think this is one of his. This is pre BAR. This is as he's published his first book, The Craft of the Cocktail.
Right at the same time.
And that's right.
Yeah. Same year.
Same year.
Yeah.
So I had never heard of Dale DeGroff. And what my wife did recognize about me is certainly I have an aspect of romantic nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, pertaining to the music, pertaining to lifestyle, pertaining to the culinary aspect of things and the complexities of combining flavors and ingredients and that type of thing. And so she happened across an advertisement on a web on Slow Foods.
Oh, cool.
Somebody somehow mentioned the fact that Dale DeGroff, the king of the cocktail, was putting on a seminar at the Marriott Marquis on rum punch. And she said, rum, tiki, that's right up Adam's alley. You know, because I had a very passing interest in tiki. And
That's pertaining to your interest in like mid-century modernism.
That's correct.
Right,
because our house is decorated that. There's a term which I loathe but have to acknowledge is completely accurate. Metropolitan. I'm sorry, retropolitan. So I hate those kind of labels, but it happens to apply. And so she thought, hey, why not? Adam, check this thing out. And it was really a transformative moment in my life as a straight edge guy that had no interest in booze, going to this seminar where everyone had a bar set up, and Dale is such a master raconteur in terms of explaining the place of rum in our culture and in terms of going back to the quote unquote invention of rumbustion back in Barbados and the whole thing. And he brought that up to the modern day, and I was fascinated by the complexity of these drinks and the deftness and execution it requires to make these things come to life.
Right.
And also, these drinks are so shrouded in secrecy and lore. Every drink has a story, and the characters that created these out of the post-Prohibition era are fascinating people in their own right. And Dale really painted a wonderful swashbuckling picture of the combination of ingredients to form these drinks that I had, first of all, never knew existed, and then could not believe how delicious they tasted.
Right. One thing that I really respect about you, and for our listeners, Adam actually is not a working bartender, but he can bartend circles around most bartenders out there, especially with this new onset of tiki bars out there, not really paying attention to the classic like techniques and involvement for these cocktails. And one thing I really admire about your skill with these drinks is just that, like your admiration of the proper recipes and mm-hmm. measurements, and there's no like eyeballing, like
no
to down to the like literally to the last drop. You always make these drinks in the most prophetic, like just intense way, and right. they come out to be really great. I want to talk also about, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
I want to talk about the fact that you have the back end of an Airstream trailer in your apartment.
That's right. That's
for
right.
For somebody that's not a working bartender, that is an orgeat producer, which we're going to get to in a sec as well, and an enthusiast, and just a straight up enthusiast, not only with tiki drinks, which is your main focus, but classic cocktails as well. Mm-hmm. Adam has this bar in his apartment. He has this great loft apartment in Brooklyn, and he has one of the coolest bars that I've ever seen in my entire life. Oh, and I've seen a lot of bars. It's the back end of an Airstream trailer.
That's correct.
Chopped off.
Right.
The foot rail is the back bumper.
Right.
Has working tail lights and license tag light.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a kegerator in it.
It does indeed.
And the tap handle is a miniature Airstream Bambi trailer.
That's correct. And this thing is hand fabricated to spec at the Airstream factory.
It's produced by them.
It's produced by them.
All the doors and the drawers and the cabinet doors in the back are all actual Airstream
components. All the stuff that this is put together with are right off the assembly line at the Airstream factory in Ohio.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing.
It's a great piece.
If you ever get a chance to hang out with Adam at his place and have his amazingly crafted cocktails and general revelry about cocktail culture, and
it's all about conviviality. Yeah. It's creating that exactly.
It'll be an experience that you will never forget. The thing about the bar that you have that drives me insane every time, like I come over to your place and have these well crafted cocktails, is you have on your bar, framed on your bar, you have a picture of your grandfather.
That's correct. Yes,
he was a Rheingold beer rep, and it's a picture of your grandfather and grandmother.
That's right.
In their basement bar at their place, and it's totally tiki'd out.
It really is. I mean, the guy really had a knack. Jerry McCarthy, he was a Rheingold beer rep here in Brooklyn for years. That was his. He worked for an ice cream company for a while. He worked for Breyers, and then he went over to beer. And this guy... From ice cream to beer.
What else do you want?
That's it. The two staples in life.
the two main food groups.
And he was the master host. This guy was just unbelievable. And that bar was just unbelievable.
I love that. I love the way that it's that you inherited that from him.
Yes. Albeit late, but I did inherit it.
Late, but yeah, like the just the hosting side of it and the tiki side of it. I think it's so cool that like you guys that it ran
it's,
in the family.
It's in the blood. It was dormant for a while, and now it's come to full flourish. You know, yeah. And I didn't waste my efforts early in life destroying my liver on, you know, natural light beer. My liver is fully intact and ready for combat.
And that's something we're going to talk about here in a sec. We're going to take a little bit of break, and we'll be back with Adam Kolesar talking about tiki drinks.
Awesome.
And and mid-century modernism.
There you
All
go.
Right, back in a sec.
Back in the States. Oh, baby, baby, that's a big romance. I said your old tiger hasn't got a chance. I said he's standing in the jungle bed as he can be. Come on, breathe on, just as you can be. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Meanwhile, back in the jungle.
Let me out of here.
In the jungle.
The sound you're hearing right now is Adam Kolesar shaking up a couple of Mai Tais, but proper Mai Tais.
That's right, sir.
This is a classic cocktail. Was that 34 or 37?
Actually, let me get back on mic here, be a little professional. Actually, the Mai Tai dates to 1944,
I'm thinking about the zombie, I guess.
Well, you're thinking about the inspiration, cooler. That's correct. The inspiration for the Mai Tai, which was the QB cooler.
Right.
Which was invented by Don the Beachcomber.
Right. And then Trader Vic in 44.
That's correct.
Came out with the Mai Tai.
That's right.
Cool. So it's amazing how much people botch this drink. And, like, there are competitions, cocktail competitions, that are built around this drink. And they almost, they rarely ever resemble anything close to an actual Mai Tai.
You know, that's a big stickling thing with me personally, is this is undoubtedly that this and the zombie, but this especially, the Mai Tai. Your grandmother has heard of the Mai Tai.
Yeah.
And there are so few people on the planet that have actually tasted what a Mai Tai should taste like. And right. To give you an example, I've been out to three different places in the last 4 days, and each of the Mai Tais that I've had have no, absolutely zero DNA with what a proper Mai Tai should taste like.
A little bit of history on the Mai Tai, like Mai Tai meaning the best.
Correct.
Is that correct? Yeah. It. First of all, let's talk about the ingredients on it in the drink. You've got a couple of different rums, typically like a dark and a gold.
Yeah. One of the things that most Mai Tai or most tiki enthusiasts and experts agree on is that one of the rums, the dark rum, should have some aspect of funk to it. Mm-hmm. And me personally, and this is me, Adam, I like a Demerara for my funk. But the conventional wisdom to properly executed Mai Tais goes toward the agricole. Using an aged agricole as your funk element,
right? From Martinique, the way that these rums are produced, or they for our listeners, Martinique rum tends to have this crazy funk to it that almost in the way that like I kind of relate it to blue cheese, even though it's nowhere near the same kind of profile. It's just the way that it's perceived. You know, being right. Like a very funky thing that's
it's
almost
vegetal,
very vegetal, like tends to have and also Martinique rums tend to be 100 proof or more. There are certain brands that nowadays have you know, they have an 80 proof version, but typically if you want like a classic Martinique rum, agricole rum, you'll have it bonded or more, like 100 proof or more. And right. There's the agricole meaning that it's made from the sugar cane, not from molasses.
That's right. That's right. And basically the use of the agricole came as in the quest, if you will, of substituting for the holy grail of all Mai Tai rums, which is the 17-year Ray and Nephew Jamaican rum.
And there's only one bar in the world that has it and can make you a proper Mai Tai as per the original spec, the 1944 correct. Spec. And that's the, it's at the Belfast Hotel, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah.
And that will set you back $1,000. So
I really want to try it. I mean, I would pay, maybe I'd split it with somebody.
I think that's the wise solution to that. You know, so just to have a mouthful of,
yeah,
a proper Mai Tai.
Now, okay, so let's get back to the recipe of the Mai Tai.
Yes,
we've got a couple of different rums. We've got Curacao,
yes,
which is an orange liqueur from the island of Curacao.
Yes,
and then we have, did I say lime juice? We have lime juice. We
an
have
ounce Curacao of lime juice.
Then we have Orgeat, which is an almond liqueur, basically.
Right, like an almond syrup, if you will, that dates back. If you read any, like Edith Wharton, the old ladies used to drink Orgeat. I mean, it was derived from French barley water,
yeah,
and became a very popular sweetener.
It's you see like brands like Torani,
mm-hmm,
and
well, there's Fee Brothers.
Fee Brothers has one too,
right?
You see these behind like coffee bars a lot of time because it's a popular sweetener for, like you were just saying, like for like coffees and teas and things like mm-hmm. that. You actually make your own, the company, the Brooklyn Orgeat company.
Right.
And you've been placed in bars, modern tiki bars like, Lanikai, but also with like, some of the other Julie Reiner, establishments like mm-hmm. Clover Club, Flatiron.
Right.
And also at my bar at Prime Meats, mm-hmm. We do a cocktail there with an ounce of Orgeat and a bottle of Underberg and some brandy and some lemon.
One of my favorites, the Alpine Sour.
The Alpine Sour. You started out making Orgeats, and then you also do some Falernum, which is a lime cordial.
That's right. The West Indian, like exactly, lime, clover, ginger, mm-hmm. with an overproof rum.
Clove ginger, right?
Well, actually, I'm sorry, cloves and ginger.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
And I use all of your products, and they're great. They're amazing. They put the right amount of distinction into a cocktail. Like, one of my cocktails, the one that you actually renamed for... I wish we had more time to talk about this because we're gonna need hours of this. We're not near the end of the show, but we had a cocktail together, Adam and I, at the Maikai, at the Hukilau,
at the Maikai, yes,
in Fort Lauderdale, which is a yearly event. It's a tiki Polynesian event, and they do a room crawl. And so in the hotel, they do an event where each room sets up a bar, and they design their room out, and they like decorate it, and they have a contest on the best design room, mm-hmm, the best cocktail, and our cocktail won.
That's
last
correct.
Year at and the Hukilau.
Yes, initially Damon designed this cocktail for a Benedictine contest, and it really had a fabulous tropical flair, and just the whole audacity of introducing a Benedictine based tiki drink to a really hardcore tiki audience. Very discerning people.
Really judgmental.
They're super judgmental, and, you know, like any hardcore group of folk. And what we did is we just, it was the Cote d'Azur cooler, and we rebadged it the Papa T Paralyzer. And it's a potent drink, nonetheless, but it totally blew people away in that it was such a delightfully unexpected combination of flavors with the requisite complexity and funk that even the most discerning tikiite would really appreciate. And that's what tiki really is all about, is what, yeah, you don't have to be so dogmatic with rum necessarily, but how is it that you create a profile that kind of invites the escape? It's all about, tiki is all about the escapism. And when properly executed, you also happen to have a really beautifully balanced, complex drink that would satisfy any classic cocktail guy. And that's the thing. That's the bad rap that my good, well-intended barkeeps out in the world, when they make me a Mai Tai that has zero resemblance to what we're sipping now, it misinforms the public, unfortunately, and, you know, there you have it.
Yeah. I'm going to ask my producer real quick. Jack, do you mind if we run long with this? All right. You know what? We're going to go 45 minutes with this show because we've got more to talk
it's
about.
It's such a vast endeavor in terms of what we got in front of us.
Yeah. I want to talk real quick about the Mai Tai that you just made for us in the studio.
Right.
You're using El Dorado 15.
Right.
Your rum.
That's also my funk element.
That's your funk element. You're using the Appleton Jamaican Rum Special. This is the It's a handle of rum.
It's a handle of rum. It's one of my greatest workhorses in that it's a gold rum that really does a fantastic job in lieu of a gold Puerto Rican, because it's a very nice rum that has enough character but not so much character that it overwhelms a drink.
And this paired up with your orgeat that you most orgeats are actually made from like blanched almonds. This one's actually toasted.
Right.
So your proprietary way of making orgeat is you toast the almonds first and then you make the orgeat. So it ends up having like this richness that goes so well with aged spirits, like with your aged rums here. You've got a 15-year rum, and I believe Appleton is a 4-year?
Yeah, not very long, enough just to pick up the oak. Or
some color.
A little caramel yeah, color. You know, but it's a nice neutral rum. And I've made probably 200 Mai Tais in my life, if not more, in search of that holy grail.
You probably made 200 just for me.
Yeah. I mean, it really is the test bed, if you will. But the idea behind toasting really is to bring out the, you know, when you look at the structure of your tongue, the last thing you taste is bitter. That's at the base mm-hmm. of the tongue. And what I found with a lot of commercially available orgeats was that they were simply too floral.
Cloying and floral.
They're very cloying. They go way overboard in terms of that.
They tend to use too
perfumey,
much like orange flower water and things like that. Yeah.
And if one thing, anyone that knows me knows that I'm fairly dogmatic on trying desperately to recreate flavor profiles that the founding fathers had intended.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not necessarily a really creative person, but if I can replicate a drink as it was intended, then I feel relatively happy. Now, I take a little bit of liberty, using the Demerara, but the whole quest for orgeat was really to get out of that perfumey stuff.
Yeah.
And get more to orgeat that actually tastes
like
almonds.
Almond. Yeah, totally.
Because that was the idea.
Nice. Adam, do you mind if we take a quick break?
Not at all.
And then we'll come back, and I really appreciate you coming on and letting us run long with this.
I love to talk tiki, man.
We're probably going to have to set up a return a
part,
show for a
part,
you.
Part two part sometime two, down part the line. Three. All right. Awesome.
Cool. Guys, this is Damon Bolte from the Heritage Radio Network. My guest is Adam Kolesar. This is The Speakeasy. We'll be back in a moment.
This is the story of men and women who shed not only their clothes, but also their...
My guest today is Adam Kolesar, tiki enthusiast and general badass. he's just mixed up about 5 minutes ago a couple of Mai Tais for us. Traditional Mai Tais.
Very traditional.
His style. Let's talk about your spec. I mean, okay. Typically you've got two different rums.
That's right.
Horchata, lime, and Curacao. People tend to like mix out the... they'll use like Cointreau or Grémignac. Like instead of Curacao, they'll use... a different sweetener. They'll maybe use you know, obviously they always, people always switch out the rums.
Yes.
Personally, I like to use dandelion and burdock bitters in mine.
Right.
It's like a macadamia kind of thing.
But there's a rationale behind your addition to that of that ingredient. It's not, you've thought about it.
Yeah.
And that really counts for a lot.
But that's all stemmed on the basis of the original Mai Tai recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And what people, I feel like a lot of people tend to just use the name as any kind of like rum thrown in with any
you're
other
correct.
Juice. Yeah, like
it's, you were it's saying a well-known a, name.
Yeah, I mean that and the zombie. I mean, like yes. they're like the two
zombie's
original,
a lot worse, frankly.
I know. It's like let's throw four different rums together and some
Hawaiian punch is a yep. common denominator yeah. in a wonderfully executed zombie.
Let's talk about your recipe here.
Okay, so. You know, it's all, not only is it ingredients, but it's about the methodology of the build.
Mm-hmm.
And there again, I've tried different builds. And so, the bill of fare, if you will, 1 ounce of lime juice,
mm-hmm.
1 ounce of the Appleton Special, 1/2 ounce of the Curacao. And when I say Curacao, this is Senor Curacao, which in
Curacao
my,
of Curacao.
That's it's like right. Actually, it's manufactured it's the on real, the island yeah. of origin. And it's a real revelation to the Mai Tai in this country in the Northeast.
For our listeners here, let's talk about Curacao for just one yes. second, and we'll get back to the,
absolutely.
The recipe. Curacao was an orange liqueur on the island of Curacao.
Mm-hmm.
What they had were a lot of... bitter oranges.
Right, these small bitter
small
oranges.
Small bitter oranges. Like, basically like Valencia kind of sized oranges. And what they realized is like they didn't really want to eat them
right.
or use them for any kind of cooking or anything. So they realized that they could make a distillate with them, like a liqueur with them, and then they could trade it out. And that's yeah. where the term Curacao comes from.
And it's the reference standard, again, going back to reference standard, but it's the reference standard for what Curacao should taste like. Mm-hmm. And like you say, oftentimes you'll see a change in spec with a Cointreau, with a Grand Marnier, and these are liquors with very different properties and intensities of oranginess, if you will,
right.
that will quickly overpower the delicate balance that Trader Vic achieved when he created the Mai Tai.
Especially like when you use something like Grand Marnier.
Yeah.
Grémignac is an orange, or it's an orange liqueur, but it's based with cognac.
Right.
So you've got the brandy aspect in that too,
yeah.
which classically, like rum and brandy in tiki drinks, I mean, like even not tiki, not just
in
tiki
general.
Drinks, Tom and Jerry.
Yes.
I mean, rum and brandy, you know.
Rum and brandy.
So, I mean, like when you've got a swap out like that happening, then you're really changing the cocktail altogether. You do something with your. I want to get back to this recipe, but you do something when you shake up your Mai Tai. You typically put you'll squeeze a lime
right.
into the drink, and then you'll throw the shell of the lime.
Yes,
into the shaker.
Absolutely.
And what that does is it expels the essential oils, the zest out of the peel, which is such a cool thing to me. Like, and you just really get this full flavor.
Right.
Of the
it adds another dimension to the lime component, the sour component. And then the other thing is you have your double old fashioned, you pack that with your crushed ice. Mm-hmm. And what I'll do is I pour the Demerara over the ice prior.
That's the Eldorado 15.
The Eldorado 15 Demerara over the ice prior to pouring the remainder of the mixture on top of that. And I find it does make a difference in the way the drink comes together as it dilutes.
It's like a reverse float.
It's a reverse float, exactly. So you let that Demerara just trickle its way down the crushed ice, and then you pour the mixture on top of that. You hit your mint sprig, and, you know, as Don the Beachcomber said, sip until the desired effect is achieved. About all his drinks, but this being a Trader Vic drink. But nonetheless, that's my build. And, you know, in my experience, I've tried all different methodologies. That's what kind of satisfies my ultra geek,
yeah.
you know, in terms of a well-built, fairly representative Mai Tai, the way it should taste.
Cool.
You know, with that build and that
and
spec.
And it's a lovely drink. It's one of my favorite Mai Tais. Speaking of Mai Tais, yes. You were recently at a particular Brooklyn establishment. We should probably not name.
Yes,
a classic Brooklyn establishment. And you ordered a Mai Tai off their menu, and it was one of those like Hawaiian punch ish.
It totally was. Drinks. And what was funny is, you know, and I love this place, and I love the bar, and, you know, it has its own point of view, but I like to order a Mai Tai just to see how it comes out a lot of times. And it will always be an agreeable rum punch, but it's very, very, in fact, it's never a Mai Tai. Mm. Fair enough. But this drink was funny in that the pre-mixed generic fruit punch was resting clearly on the bottom, and then over it was the well dark rum, and it was completely separated, which yeah. I found interesting. So I had to agitate it myself,
it's
and
like
we had
Poos the cafe of
a Poos cafe Mai Tai, yes, but a tasty, potent rum punch nonetheless. But yeah, not a Mai Tai.
So this place we're talking about, which we're not going to name, is a very classic Brooklyn place.
Yes.
Beloved, absolutely. We've been talking lately about the survivors of classic New York, I guess New York City area.
Well, the tri-state.
The tri-state area.
Tiki survivalists, yes.
There are a few classic tiki bars that were original. Like, there's a lot of new bars coming out. And
certainly.
Out, you've got Lanikai, which is, in my opinion, the best of the new.
It's really, they really have a reverence.
They're not a tiki bar. They make tiki drinks very well, though.
But they do. I mean, Polynesian, yeah. tropical, however right. you want to couch it,
yeah.
their execution is in the finest tradition of Don the Beachcomber.
Totally.
Absolutely. With a reverence and a beauty that does not exist in a lot of places.
And an awesome poo-poo platter.
Correct. Oh, well, job. Yes, absolutely.
So you've got these other places like the like Riff Raff and the Hurricane Club and all this, like new places that they're using this theme. Like you're almost seeing like history repeat itself. You're seeing like this aesthetic being used to grab attention, but they're not putting the attention into the drinks.
Right. It's
like classic.
It's about
classically.
Right, it's about that, the atmosphere, what's hot and mm-hmm. what sells and what makes money. And listen, no one opens up any bar without the intention of earning money.
Making a lot of money. You want to make a lot right. of money? Yeah.
But a lot of what I've encountered out in the new bars is a real penchant for either super duper potent drinks that have no resemblance to the drinks that they're named after, or, you know, a complete adaptation, if you will, to suit a specific demographic. One of the places we're talking about, you look at their quote unquote tiki menu, their Polynesian menu, and by and large, it's all it's very heavily weighted to vodka. And because vodka is what
sells to them,
what sells to that particular demographic that they're trying to achieve. And what they do is they make a vodka infused this, that, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Sugarcane infused vodka.
That's right. You know, and I give that a little bit of leeway in that that's they're not calling that drink something it shouldn't be. They're calling it their own name, but right. It's not doing a lot for tiki, so to speak. It's capitalizing on tiki, whereas Alani Kai has a reverence to Polynesian and island influenced type things. But yeah, so the what we're encountering is that latter day characterization of poorly balanced syrupy sweet umbrella drinks. And it really sells
more aesthetic than
yeah, food. or drinks that are frankly served out of a pink flamingo,
yeah,
that you put the straw up its behind with sparklers in it. You know, there's a lot of fun in that, but unfortunately the downside is it's instantly dismissible and completely silly. And listen, tiki is supposed to be fun. Let's not.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, but. The drink becomes completely dismissive and disposable,
yeah.
In that context, and so the people that are really trying to put this together well, we're looking at a cycle, perhaps that whereas well executed classic cocktails are taken seriously, and it's a real culinary movement, and this is in post-prohibition, tiki is what really got mixology back on its feet. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, you know, because there was such an absence of available spirits post prohibition, but rum you could buy by the case for next to nothing because rum running had always taken place. You know, there was Canadian whiskey and there was rum.
Right.
And Don the Beachcomber said he was a pragmatist. I made these rum drinks because I had a lot of rum available to me. Mm-hmm. And I discovered that mixing those different rums together could produce a really awesome combination.
Adam, it has been my pleasure to have you on the show today. We have so much more to talk about.
We do.
I'm glad that you are available to run long with the show today. I do want to talk about just quickly about the three...
Yes.
Possibly four of the original tiki bars.
That's
from
right.
The 60s and 70s that opened in the New York City area. We went to Jade Island.
That's
in Staten
right.
Island.
Yes.
Awesome. And we went to Chan's Dragon Inn.
Yep.
And the Ridgefields.
That's right. In Ridgefields, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Opened in 1965.
1965. That was Jade Island was opened in 1972. 72,
correct.
And the last of the trifecta would be King Yum's.
Opened in 1953.
Yeah.
Granddaddy.
I've been with you to those, the previous two.
Right.
But I have not yet been to King Yum's.
Yes.
And we are actually going to be going to King Yum's next Wednesday night. What time did we say?
We said 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
And that's in Fresh Meadow, Queens. It's on Union Turnpike, 181-08 Union Turnpike.
Awesome. And we'd like to extend an open invite to any of our listeners that want to come out and check out one of the oldest original tiki bars in the New York
that's
City
right.
area.
That we'll fusion be there. Of Chinese food made Polynesian with an exotic drinks menu and a fabulous bar there, a real survivor. And those drinks, you're tasting drinks that are the same, probably prepared by the same guy that mixed them in the 50s and 60s.
The guy that opened the bar.
The guy that opened the bar, exactly.
Adam, I really appreciate you being on the show today, and I really appreciate the amazing level of tiki and rum knowledge that I've acquired from you over the past couple of years since I've known you, and I also appreciate this Mai Tai that you just made for me. That's
it's what's all about.
Slowly melting away in my hand and taking away all the pressures of the snowy day that we're facing.
That's right. A little bit of faux Polynesia on the encroaching storm.
Yeah, we've got summer ahead of us.
That's right.
Thanks a lot. My guest today has been Adam Kolzar of the Brooklyn Orgeat Company. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. We'll see you next week, where my guest will be Ari Form of the Jake Walk. Cheers. Man, I wouldn't lie. You can't hire than a kite. Now when you see